Doesn't have to be big. A few hundred meters will do just fine. Fuchs broke into a smile. It made his heavy-featured, normally dour face light up. I think I understand. A nickel iron piece a few hundred meters across would contain enough iron ore to feed the world's steel industry for a year or more. Dan jabbed a forefinger in his direction. You've got it, Lars. That's what I want to show them back home. Amanda spoke up. Didn't someone bring a nickel-iron asteroid into the Earth-Moon vicinity? Gunn did it, Fuchs answered. He even named the asteroid Pittsburgh, after the steel-producing center in the United States. Yeah, and the double-damned GEC tossed Gunn off the rock and damn near ruined him, Dan recalled sourly. You simply can't have people bringing potentially dangerous objects into the Earth-Moon region, Amanda said. Suppose this Pittsburgh thing somehow was perturbed into an orbit that would impact Earth. It could have been devastating. Dan scowled at her. It's been more than 4 centuries since Newton figured out the laws of motion and gravity. We can calculate orbits with some precision. Pittsburgh wasn't going to endanger anything. It was just the double-damned GEC's way of maintaining control. Poncho looked up from her palm comp. We've got fuel enough to maneuver for 3 days out of the 4AU range. Good enough, Dan said. We'll be scanning all the way out there. Maybe we'll get lucky and find a nickel-iron baby right away. Fuchs shook his head gloomily. There is vast emptiness out there. Pointing to the wall screen display, he went on, We think of the belt as crowded with asteroids, but really they are nothing but infinitesimal bits of matter floating in an enormous sea of emptiness. If that chart was drawn to true scale, the asteroids would be too small to see, except in a microscope. A few needles in a tremendous haystack, Amanda added. Dan shrugged carelessly. That's why we have radar and telescopes and all the other sensors. Poncho brought the conversation back to practicality. Okay, so we have to go hunting to find a metallic rock. What about the others you want, boss? Lars has already picked them out. Tapping on his own palm comp, lying on the table before him, Fuchs highlighted 2 particular asteroids on the wall display. Bright red circles flashed around them. With another touch of his stylus on the palm comp's tiny keyboard, the trajectory of Star Power 1 appeared on the display, with the ship's current position outlined by a flashing yellow circle. The closer object is 26-238, an S-type asteroid. Stony, Amanda said. Yes, Fuchs agreed, smiling at her. Stony asteroids are rich in silicates and light metals such as magnesium, calcium, and aluminum. Dan stared at the display. The dot showing Star Power 1's position was noticeably moving. Christ, we're going like a bat out of hell. He had known the facts and figures of the fusion-driven ship's performance, but now, seeing the reality of it on the chart, it began to hit him viscerally. Our second objective, Fuchs was going on, will be 32-114, a C-type chondritic object. Chondritic asteroids contain carbon and hydrates. Water, said Poncho, getting up from the narrow table and heading for the food freezer. Yes, water, but not in the liquid form. The water molecules are linked chemically to the other molecules in the rock, Amanda said. You have to apply heat or some other form of energy to get the water out. But it's water, Dan said, watching Poncho as she pulled a foil-wrapped prepackaged meal from the freezer. Selene needs water. So does anybody working in space. You will do your work on water, Amanda murmured, and you'll lick the bloomin' boots of him that's got it. What's that? Dan asked, puzzled. She looked almost embarrassed. Oh, Kipling. Rudyard Kipling. Gunga Din, Fuchs added quickly. A very fine poem. By a white European male chauvinist, Poncho quipped as she slid her meal into the microwave oven. How can you be hungry? Amanda asked. You had a full meal only a few hours ago. Pancho grinned at her. I don't have to watch my figure. I burn off the calories just like that. She snapped her fingers.
But those prepackaged meals, Amanda said, they're so prepackaged.
I like 'em, said Pancho. Anyway, Dan said, raising his voice slightly to cut off any disagreements, those are the two rocks we're going after. We'll take some samples to solidify our claim and then head for the outer region of the belt and find ourselves a metallic body.
I've been wondering, Amanda said slowly, about the legal status of any claims we make. If the IAA considers this flight to be illegal, I mean, if we're deemed to be outlaws,
they could disallow our claims to the asteroids, Dan finished for her. I've thought about that.
And?
A single, sharp, clear ping sounded from the open hatch to the bridge. Pancho sprinted from the microwave oven and ducked through the hatch. She came back into the wardroom a moment later, her face taut. Solar flare. Amanda got to her feet and pushed past Pancho into the bridge. Fuchs looked concerned, almost alarmed. Dan said, I'll check out the electron guns.
Might not hit us, Pancho said. The plasma cloud's still too far away to know if it'll reach us or not.
I'll check out the electron guns anyway, Dan said, getting up from his chair. I've taken enough radiation to last me a lifetime. I don't need any more.
Earthview Restaurant.
The instant Martin Humphreys saw Chris Cardenas, he realized that she was suffering pangs of guilt. Big time. The scientist looked as if she hadn't slept well recently. Dark circles ringed her eyes. Her face looked bleak. He rose from his chair as the maitre d' escorted her to the table and smiled as the dark-clad man held Cardenas' chair for her while she sat down. Cardenas was not smiling. Gesturing with an outstretched arm, Humphreys said, "The finest restaurant within 400 million kilometers." It was an old joke in Cellini. The Earthview was the only true restaurant on the moon. The other two eateries were cafeterias. 10 years earlier, the Yamagata Corporation had opened a top-grade tourist hotel at Cellini, complete with a 5-star restaurant. But Yamagata was forced to shut down their restaurant as the greenhouse warming throttled the tourist trade down to a trickle. Now they sent their few guests to the Earthview. At least Cardenas had dressed properly, Humphreys saw. She wore a sleeveless forest green sheath decorated tastefully with accents of gold jewelry. But she looked as if she were ready to attend a funeral, not an elegant dinner. Without preamble, she leaned across the table so intently she almost touched heads with Humphreys. "You've got to warn them," she whispered urgently. "There's plenty of time for that," he said easily. "Relax and enjoy your meal." In truth, the Earthview was a fine restaurant by any standard. The staff were mostly young, except for the stiffly formal maitre d', who added an air of grave dignity to the establishment. Carved out of the lunar rock 4 levels below the surface, the restaurant lived up to its name by having broad, sweeping window walls that displayed the view from the lunar surface. It was almost like looking through windows at the barren, gauntly beautiful floor of the great ring-walled plain of Alphonsus. The Earth was always in the dark sky, hanging there like a splendid, glowing, blue-and-white ornament, ever-changing, yet always present. There were no robots in sight at the Earthview restaurant, although the menus and wine list appeared on display screens built into the tabletops. Instead of tablecloths, each place setting rested on a small mat of glittering lunar honeycomb metal, as thin and flexible as silk. Humphreys ordered wine from their waiter. As soon as the young man walked away from their table, Cardenas hunched forward again and whispered, "Now! Tell them now! The sooner they know, the safer they'll be." He gave her a hard look. Apparently, the nanobugs in her bloodstream can't deal with the effects of too little sleep, he thought. Or maybe she has nightmares. She's on a royal guilt trip, that's certain. "We agreed, Dr. Cardenas," he said softly, "that we would warn them just as they approached the outer fringes of the belt. That won't happen for another day and a half." "I want you to warn them now," she